as we kick into the new year, how would you like to work 4 days a week and be paid for five? That story a bit later in the show. When work changes, and of course it is, who thrives? Well, not necessarily the people you might expect, the ones who've always been the stars. The psychological concepts of a fixed mindset and a growth mindset are now being applied in the workplace. Jill Klein's professor at the Melbourne Business School and a fellow at the Melbourne Medical School, both connected to the University of Melbourne. And Jill joins me now. Welcome to Best Practice.
Thanks very much for having me.
Can we start by defining our terms? People with a fixed mindset, what are they like?
Well, when you have a fixed mindset, you believe that intelligence and abilities are fixed entities. So, you know, you have a certain amount of intelligence and there isn't that much you can do about it. And it's kind of a notion that you either have it or you don't. You're smart or you're not. You're gifted or you're not. And that's sort of the fixed mindset view. The growth mindset view is that intelligence and abilities are malleable and they change and grow and develop through activities that allow that to happen, like practice and learning and receiving feedback, and sometimes by failing or working through setbacks, overcoming those, that's how you build skills, abilities, and intelligence.
So you can have a fixed mindset and be really capable and have a lot of self-belief and confidence, but that might be, it turns out, quite brittle.
Yes. And so that's the problem. We sort of had this idea, and it was a correct one, that, you know, self-esteem is really good for kids. That when children, teenagers have high self-esteem, that predicts lots of good, healthy outcomes. Our mistake was thinking that you built self-esteem, robust self-esteem, by telling kids that they're wonderful in everything. You know, you're brilliant, you're so smart. Everybody wins, nobody loses, everybody gets a trophy. And, you know, that generation or so of child rearing where we were trying to build self-esteem. And it turns out that that's kind of backfired on us. That's led to a fixed mindset. Oh, some people don't have it. I do. And then when the world starts to be a bit more honest with you about what your strengths and weaknesses actually are, and you start hearing negative things about yourself, if you've developed a fixed mindset, you become very brittle. Because if you either have it or you don't, then something that suggests you don't have it, a failure or a setback or hearing criticism, that is a big blow to identity. And can lead to this feeling that, oh my gosh, this would mean that I don't have it. And so there's a defensiveness. You either blame failures or setbacks on other people, or you deflect criticism. Or if you can't do that, it can lead to kind of a real crisis. Gee, I thought I was great, and now I'm finding out that I'm not. And that can lead to depression and other kinds of problems.
And I guess when an organization is changing a lot, if you've got a fixed mindset, it might lead to a kind of paralysis because you're used to thinking, well, this is me, I'm brilliant, and now all of a sudden I'm not ticking the boxes.
Exactly. And if you have the fixed mindset, then it's particularly threatening. So you've been told in your organization for years that you're top-notch, that you're fantastic, that you're one of our best, and now the world changes such that you need some different skills and different abilities than the ones that have made you successful in the past. And with a fixed mindset, there's a sense of, well, I don't have those, and I want to stay where I'm recognized as being great at something. That's what's safer. And so in that situation, people can be very, very resistant to change. But if you have a growth mindset, then the idea is, well, I built those abilities through a lot of experience and practice and setbacks, and I can build new abilities that way as well. And so there's much more of belief that one can transition into new roles and develop new skills and abilities, and provided there's also some support from the organization.
Now, this, we should say, is built on the work of the Stanford psychologist Carol Dweck.
Yes, that's correct. And it's about 4 decades worth of research now, not just by Dweck, but by many, many different scholars, very consistently showing the important impact of having a fixed versus a growth mindset.
Now, the concept's being or has been extended to entire workplaces or workplace cultures. How does that work?
Well, so Dweck and some colleagues recently did a study where they went into 7 large companies and asked people questions like, my company identifies early the star people and puts all their resources on those people. So a number of questions. It's a fairly long survey to try and identify whether the workplace culture seems to be a fixed or a growth mindset culture. You know, how much mentoring there is and development of abilities versus just trying to find people who have certain abilities and then put them in the role and other kinds of aspects. What happens if you make a mistake? Are you encouraged to learn from the mistake? Are you punished for the mistake? Well, one thing that was interesting is that there was a lot of consensus in how people answered these questions within an organization. So it wasn't like some people saw it as fixed and some people saw it as growth. And then they looked at what does it predict. It turns out that when workers see an organization as a growth mindset organization, they tend to feel much more supported. They feel like they can be innovative, that they can take chances and try new things. There are a lot of good outcomes that come from being growth mindset. But the organizations that were viewed by their employees as fixed mindset, they didn't feel like they were developed as much. They felt like they couldn't take chances. There was just more bickering and just more of a sort of toxic culture.
I think also the gigantic US conglomerate GE was renowned under the legendary chief executive, Jack Welch, for having that kind of growth mindset of hiring people because of what they'd be able to do, what they might be capable of, their ability to learn, rather than what was already on their CV.
I think that's exactly right. And there's so much competition for talent, quote unquote talent. You know, everyone wants the top 5%. And the problem with that is, even if we imagine there was fixed talent, our ability to measure it and figure out who has it is actually much poorer than we think. You know, personality measurements, skills and abilities measurements, you know, they're far, far from perfect. And so you have companies pursuing this game of trying to measure something that's not that easy to measure and then using that to choose people. And it's expensive to compete for the top 5% because lots of other people are competing for those people too. And I just really think that we would be much better off if we thought about how can we think about when we interview people and so forth, identifying who wants to learn and who's flexible and who is going to put energy and enthusiasm behind obtaining new skills, and then providing the context in which they can learn.
You've done some interesting work applying these ideas to the medical setting, and particularly with trainee doctors and errors.
That's right. So one thing that was interesting, you know, as a psychologist, I was teaching in the business school and I teach decision making and resilience and leadership. And, you know, it turns out those are important things in medicine. So when the medical school started to learn about what I was doing, they got me more and more involved in their programs. And now I split my time between the two schools. And the thing that struck me in making the transition from teaching business school students to medical students is just the high stakes of the medical environment. We're teaching, you know, these wonderful MBA students, and they're going to go on to have really important jobs, but they could have a pretty major screw up, and we're still talking about losing some money, potentially some people losing jobs, which of course is not a good thing at all. But that's the worst it gets. And what I was noticing in medicine is you could make a little mistake. One of these young people moving into their internship and being a junior doctor, they can make a small mistake and it can have catastrophic consequences. Somebody could die. You have a grieving family on your hands and you can feel like, gosh, if I had just done this one thing differently, this person would still be here. And I guess because I came from this other world into the medical world, it just really struck me as how just incredibly difficult that can be. And then thinking about it in terms of fixed growth mindset, if you have a fixed mindset, and a lot of these young people do, because to get into med school, they've been top of their class pretty much their whole lives. And, you know, then they're in this very complex, very difficult work situation where and they're overworked usually, where it's very easy to get something wrong. And I was thinking, wow, you know, that's got to be very tough to do with a fixed mindset. And if you make that mistake, you're likely to be thinking, well, I shouldn't be a doctor. I don't belong in this profession. I don't have it. And so I thought, you know, growth mindset training would probably be really helpful here. And so I started doing training with them on growth mindset literally their last day of medical school, right before they started their internship, because I thought this is a good transition space to do that in and have them starting to get used to the idea that they're not perfect, they're going to make mistakes, those mistakes will have consequences, and the key thing to being a good doctor is learning from those mistakes. So we were doing those sessions, and they came up to me and they said, oh, this was hugely helpful. And occasionally they came up to me crying and with a big hug because we were speaking about something that they were very worried about. But one thing they said to me is, where were you 4 years ago when we started medical school? And so now we do, on their second day of medical school, we do this work and we do it again with them right before they go to internship.
Jill Klein's a Professor of Management and Marketing at the Melbourne Business School, and I'm Richard Adey with Best Practice on RN Summer, the ABC Listen app, or wherever you get your podcasts.